Welcome to the Whitetail Obsession Podcast with Dave Richmond and co-host Chris Worthing, where we talk and teach everything deer and turkey hunting related. Follow along as we help teach you tips and techniques about hunting, food plots, and habitat management strategies that everyone can use.
All right, guys, welcome back to Podcast 68. Chris, we have a guest on today.
We do. We
have Ryan Nordahl. Nordahl, right? Is that
yep.
Is that correct?
Yep, Nordahl.
Okay.
He's a fellow domain user.
Yes, he is.
Yep. And you're yep. out in Wisconsin, correct?
Yes, and I have a little connection to Mike Lindahl.
Okay.
One of the owners of Domain Outdoor. His parents are my mom and dad's really good friends. So I've known Mike since the day he was born. He's 5 or 6 years younger than me, so I've known him okay. his entire life. So, mm-hmm. and I just, when he was with a different company, where when he started out in the industry, you know, yep. I followed yep. him then, and I just kind of followed him along when he went off to do his other thing. So,
okay,
yep,
nice. Well, they got so many blends now; it's hard to choose.
It sure is. It sure is.
It's going to be hard to come up with something new.
Yeah.
Yep. You know,
and some of the names those guys come up with.
I know.
It kind of follows their podcast.
It does. Yeah. It does. I saw you had a video the other day or a picture or something. You said you're going to plant the dirty birds this year.
Yeah, I'm going to do some dirty bird here this year. Just something that's a little bit different in the area that's not really offered. Kind of a similar scenario I've had with grain sorghum in the past is about 15, 20 years ago, my dad and a couple neighbors run a pheasant farm together. And just my observations, you know, going into the late season when deer were more apt to hit that type of food source. And it rang true. I mean, the late season, you know, early in the season, the deer would never hit it. And I've known that, you know, basically my entire life. My background is dairy farming. We've raised these types of crops before. And sorghum sedan grass, for cow feed, deer just don't hit it when it's in that young vegetative stage like that. And they won't hit it until the seed heads are ripe late in the fall, hardened off. And it makes for a great late season food source. Now you add in sunflowers. I think there's forage soybeans, and I can't remember what else is in there. You kind of have a deadly combination. It's something that'll give the deer some cover as well, some escape cover. They will bed in it. You know, that's been my experience. I've seen some mature bucks, especially like when they had the pheasant farm and all that. Mm-hmm. Seen some really tremendous bucks come out of there. But again, it's just something that's not offered around here very much. And not a lot of guys are using it. And I think it's one of those hidden little keys, especially around here when the corn and the soybeans come off in the fall. I'll have the, you know, on my little 16 acres here at my home, there just isn't a lot around when the crops come off. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't have a lot of cover here in my 16 acres, but we've got food and we're in between two major bedding areas on neighboring properties, and they travel through here. It's a pass-through property, but now we're going to give them a reason to stop here with food source. So,
yeah, I'm not going to get a chance. I don't think Chris, you're not planting it either, but you'll have to let us know how it works.
Yeah, it sure will.
They totally destroy sunflowers here. I mean, sure. they get out of the ground 3-4 inches and they just nip them off and then I'm done.
Right.
Yep. Yep.
All right. Now, Ryan, I could be wrong, but you actually live on a dairy farm, right?
I have neighbors that have on a dairy farm. I grew up on my grandparents' dairy farm. I farmed with my brother right out of high school until I was 33 years old. I'm now 46. I left the farm in 2011 full time. I jumped around in a 3 or 4 year window after I left the farm. I always wanted something to do with whitetail. You know, I had some family members that had an archery shop and whatnot. Little background too that a lot of people don't know, and I do share it. My dad worked with the creator of another food plot company back in the mid-80s. My dad he's an agronomist in our local co-op, with a master's degree in animal livestock nutrition. Mm-hmm. And the nutritionist working out of that co-op at that time, he approached my dad about coming up and formulating a deer mineral. Well, dad came up with the formulation and he gave it to the gentleman who took off with it. Like my dad said, you know, God bless his heart, 1987, who would have ever thought that this industry would be where it's at today? And the gentleman exploded his business and, you know, creating food plots and, you know, still selling that mineral to this day and everything else. That gentleman has since retired out of the industry and sold the business. But I guess from my dad's standpoint, I never wanted that shoulda, coulda, woulda in my life. So in 2017, I basically mortgaged the farm and went all in on this thing. And my wife, I think she could have killed me, but I will admit it got tight for a couple of years because I went all in and I quit my job that I had at the time. And we struggled for a while paying the mortgage. By the skin of our teeth, we'd get by every year. And now I've dabbled in habitat business probably for 15 years on my own for some friends and family. But as a business, I've been in business now. This is my 7th season in business, and it's taken me all over the United States. I think I am now in 20 different states that I've traveled to, including Montana. But that's more for, I have a really close friend out there and he seeks my advice, and I've been out there and helped him do some things. So I guess I'll include Montana as part of that. But it's fun to get out there.
Yeah. And your business is called Epic Whitetail Habitat LLC.
Correct.
Okay. Yep. And you do land consulting. You'll go out to the client's property and design it for them. And
yep. I'll do consulting and planning, you know, anywhere in the United States where whitetail roam. Okay. I also run and do some implementation. I'll take my chainsaw wherever I go, if hinge cutting is something that I recommend, either to just do demonstrations or completely do the work for the people that I recommend it to. Mm-hmm. And people seek me out, you know, but I do run a food plot business, but that's mostly local within the state of Wisconsin. I got a couple clients out of state that I will travel for, but they're really close friends of mine. But other than that.
So they'll hire you out and you'll go and actually plan it for them.
Yes, I will.
Yep. Okay. Gotcha.
I have one client that he's a really, you know, he's that premier client of mine. He's got a connection to a bow company based out of Sparta, Wisconsin. Many of you know that it's Matthew's Bow Company. He's not actually Matt McPherson himself, but it's his brother. And that's a pretty good client to have.
Yeah, it would be. Sure.
Yep.
Now, have you found that when you go to, they hire you just for the consult?
Yep.
Have you found that they actually hire you back to do the cutting? Or do you typically do that when you're there?
It's mostly they hire me to come back and do it.
Right.
Most of the time, most of my consulting is in the winter time, which would be from the end of our deer season, which is in December, all the way through to the end of February, beginning of March. And then I'll come back because we all know this time of year is the best time of year to be hinge cutting. Mm-hmm. Hinge cutting, yeah, it can be done any time of the year, but you got to look at your regulations, especially where you have a lot of oak wilt. Like we deal with oak wilt here in our part of the state, and I think our cutoff for cutting is, I think, around the 1st or the 15th of May, and it runs through till, I believe, the end of August, really, that you're not really supposed to do any cutting. I do some on my own, but I just kind of try to keep that a rule of thumb. If I'm going to be hired out to do any hinge cutting, I'm not going to do it after the 1st of May.
Yeah.
Here in the upper Midwest, anyway, depending on what the regulations are in the state. It's kind of a state-by-state case, I think, so.
Yeah, I found as well, like I'll go consult, and then they tend to get a little overwhelmed a little bit.
Yep.
And then they get freaked out about cutting, which is dangerous, you know.
Oh, sure it is.
I don't blame them. So a lot of times my schedule, I'll be going back 2 months, 3 months later or something. Yep. And just to either get them, you know, I'll go for like a day and show them like what to do.
Yep.
And then they can kind of take over from there.
Yep.
Yeah. So yep. I was just curious if you had that same scenario where.
Yeah, that's what I get. And then I'll get hired back later in the summer, like a month or so before season mm-hmm. starts. And because you get that regenerative growth right away, you know, the right. first year. And I think that's where hinge cutting gets a bad rap, is because guys fail to go back in, clean up, create those travel corridors, open everything back up. They fail to go back in and clean up any storm damage in successional years and everything. To me, what I see, and I see it with other habitat managers that discourage hinge cutting altogether. They're trying to promote that one and done thing. We're human beings. We're lazy. We don't want to do that extra work. We want everything right now, and we don't want to have to do any maintenance after that. And that's not what it's mm-hmm. about. And I enjoy doing the work. It's not extra work that wasted time work for me. Enjoy it, the process.
I was going to say, have you ever been hired out and the people said, hey, we had somebody else here and we didn't like what they did, so we hired you? Has that happened?
Yeah, that's happened. Guys either didn't finish the job, or they, you know, they started the job, didn't complete it. They did the job, but they didn't come back and open up corridors, you know, and things like that. Yeah. So, mm-hmm.
yep. I want to rattle your brain a little bit about about hinge cutting. So the way that I see it is, most people that complain about hinge cutting typically have a one track mind.
Yep.
Myself, I'm for everything. I'm for select cuts. I'm for clear cuts, hack and squirt, hinge cutting. It just depends where is it needed at on that Absolutely. Specific property.
Absolutely.
Some of your videos, I see that you get a lot of hate for the hinge cutting.
Yep.
So, and I'm for hinge cutting. I do it myself, and I'll do it for others. If it's needed.
Yep.
So let's dive into that a little bit about where some of this this confusing information comes about hinge cutting, and what people need to maybe realize or do after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go to a property and you lay out an area, whether, you know, bedding for hinge cutting, what do you typically do and are looking for?
What I'm looking for are trees that are going to hinge cut well. But what I'm ultimately looking for, because I want to put money in a client's pocket where I can, because they're spending a lot on me to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking for guys like us to come in. I'm not a forester by any means, mm-hmm. but I have family that's in the logging industry, you know, and I've done enough on our own woods that I kind of know what to look for, as far, because I'll always recommend logging, whether it's clear cutting, select cut, wherever I possibly can, before I even fire up my own chainsaw. I was just on a property out in Western New York on my trip out there, and they had originally hired me to come in and do hinge cutting while I was there. You know, I was there to set up the property and then do any hinge cutting. And I told the gentleman when I was there, I said, before I even fire up a chainsaw here, we have to get a forester or a logger in here and do some logging, because I don't want to create that mess and have your loggers try to work around everything. Let's get mm-hmm. some of the saleable timber out of here first, and then we'll come back. He didn't really like that, but in the end of the day, he saw the bigger picture, and that's what he agreed with. But yeah, I mean, if I go into an area and I can do some hinge cutting, I'm taking those bigger trees down first. And by what I mean by that is, I'm doing my flush cut and the back cut and letting them fall, because they are dangerous. You never know what those bigger trees are going to do. I see so many guys trying to, you know, fight tree lean, and you can't do that. You put yourself mm-hmm. in a high risk situation there. And I don't want anybody hurt at the end of the day, or worse. And again, that's where I get hired in by a lot of guys. You know, they attempted it, or they just weren't sure and they backed away. and they called me, someone like me, or like you too, Dave, I'm sure you see the same thing. And, but you know, again, back to the trees that hinge well, back to the trees that don't hinge cut very well. We have a lot of silver maple here in the state of Wisconsin. And once they start to get up into that 6 to 8 inch area in diameter, they just don't hinge cut very well. And those trees at 6 to 8 inches, they can be 30, 40 feet tall already too. Mm-hmm. They grow tremendously fast. And they just don't hinge cut very well once they get that big. I think your best ones are anywhere from an inch and a half up to 3-4 inches. Otherwise, I'm just cutting them down, letting them lay, creating structure, something to fall my then hinge cut trees into. I love cutting. We've got a lot of hackberry here in the state. Some hickory, elm, field elm. They're a great tree to hinge cut, stay alive, stay attached really well. Hackberry is probably my favorite because it's a softer wood. It's in the elm family, but it's also part of the maple family as well. So it's kind of a softer wood, just stays together tremendously well. I have a tree that I did hinge cut, you know, back when I didn't really know any better. It was probably 15, 16 inches in diameter. And I was successful with hinge cutting it, created a nice base tree. But and now that was 8 years ago when I cut that tree. And now we're back hinge cutting all the successional growth off of it. So
right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I was in a property in Southern Virginia last week for 3 days, and it was 250 acres. And the client wanted to start hinge cutting and everything. And I said, no, you mm-hmm. have to get a forester in here.
Yep.
Bad. Like, yep. I mean, there was zero food. It was all closed canopy. They yep. have to get a forester. And I said, after that, I'm not a forester, but I can lead you in the right direction.
Yes.
And get a forester. Then once the plan is in place, I laid it all out for them. Then you can call me back and we can discuss,
yep.
you know, some additional hinge cutting, bedding areas and things like that.
Yep. Yep. I can totally relate. I mean, that was the client in Southwestern New York. I mean, he's an older gentleman. I understand that, you know, he's nearly 80 years old and he wants everything kind of like right now, his sense of urgency, but it's like, we got to back the cart up before the horse here.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of the day, he realized that, you know, I'm not always trying to be the right guy, but you know, I've seen enough properties to know. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
Yep. You got to lead them in the right direction and you got to make them see that bigger picture.
Right. Exactly. Now, what is some maintenance aspects into hinge cut areas? Cause I see sometimes a few years ago, I went to a client where they hired somebody and came in and hinge cut, but 3-4 years later, it was a disaster.
Yep.
They didn't come back in and do the maintenance on it. So what are some things that you need to do to look for?
Well, you know, again, storm damage is probably number one, because mm-hmm. That can occur anytime. And you go in, you created these travel corridors in specific locations that correspond with a stand location. And if they're blocked off, I mean, you don't want dead ends. And that's what I see happening. And like I said earlier, you know, guys want that one and done thing. And that's... Mm-hmm. You know, you have to go back and you have to open things up. Deer are lazy. They're going to take the path of least resistance. With hinge cutting, you're going to get that successional growth. I saw a video earlier this spring. I just happened to be scrolling along through YouTube and I come across one. And he was mocking hinge cutting and the successional growth that you get off the stump sprouts and how even after a year, those whips can be up and out of a deer's reach. And you know, that's all part of the maintenance too. You either come back and you cut those back or you bend them. I like to take a, you know, like a simple piece of paracord and just tie them down, gather them together, tie them down and bring them down. So they are at deer level. Mm-hmm. It is a lot of work. It is, but you have to be willing to go back and do it or find somebody, hire somebody to come in and do it for you if you don't want to do it.
Well, that's just like with anything. If I tell people, like, once you start cutting, you're opening up a can of worms.
Absolutely.
From the regrowth, it's always going to be some sort of maintenance aspect to it. As soon as you start cutting.
Yep, it sure is.
If you contract in on somebody like that, and you go in and hinge cut for the first time you've ever been there, and you say that you're going to go back and maintenance it, so are these people paying you up front the first time so that you can come back later, or do you charge them the second time to go back?
I'll charge them the second time to come back too. Okay. I mean, is that day and age, I have a family to feed. I've got four or five other mouths in my household to feed besides my own. So, you know, time is money. And
gotcha.
Yep.
Now, will you do small select cut areas too? Or is your, will you just do hinge cutting?
I just do hinge cutting.
Okay.
I don't do any logging or anything like that. So,
okay.
Yep. I can, like you, Dave, you know, I can lead people in the right direction for those opportunities. I've got family connections that do logging. I've got some other friends that do logging in our area anyway. And I have connections such as yourself and other people throughout the United States who I can direct if I can't make it there to do hinge cutting or logging or any other type of habitat improvement installations.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I know I sent a couple guys your way. I don't know if they actually contacted you or not.
I'm still in touch. You sent me a guy that had some land. It was either Southern Missouri or Northern Arkansas about a year or so ago.
Right.
I'm still in contact with him. He just hasn't pulled the trigger.
Okay.
There was another gentleman, I believe this past fall that you sent my way that was actually from Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
We still chit chat back and forth, throw ideas off, but he just hasn't pulled the trigger yet on it either. Gotcha. So, and I understand what we do is not cheap.
Are these areas that they're, when you're going in, are these primarily, are the people looking for travel corridors or bedding when you're doing this hinge cutting?
They're mostly looking to improve bedding areas because they want deer on their property, you know, in their, like anybody, even including myself, I'm sick of deer running off onto the neighbors all the time. And we got to give them, it starts with cover. Mm. You can have the best green food source in the entire world. If you don't have the cover, he's not going to show up during daylight hours because he just doesn't feel safe. He's been down that road before.
So in your opinion, everybody has one, so it doesn't matter, but what size piece of property would be your minimal to create a bedding area on to try to hold deer?
I've done it down to 20 acres and I wish I had the picture still. I had it on my phone last fall, but I fried that phone. But down to 20 acres, we had a mature buck living on that. I got to take that back. I had another property down in Southwest Wisconsin. These three young guys, it was their first property that they bought together. They wanted, their idea was they'd buy a property, they'd improve it, and then basically flip it, you know, get a couple of years proving that the habitat improvements worked. And by the second year after the plan that I put together and I did some of the hinge cutting on there, by year number two, they had killed 173-inch deer with their bows. They had a 200-inch deer living on the property.
Wow.
And they missed him. They had two encounters with him, missed him once, but he was living on the property. He come in, it was the end of September that year, and he was there all the way up until the week before our gun season, which starts this weekend before Thanksgiving in November. But then he disappeared, went off on public land about 3 miles down the road and got shot on Monday of rifle season that year.
Oh, wow. Crazy.
But that was pretty cool. But 20, you know, that was, you know, on the extreme end of the spectrum, you know, much lower than that. It's basically, hopefully he just comes in here. at the right time. Yeah. Hopefully everything is right.
Just passing through.
Yep.
Sometimes what I mostly see is you'll get like, you know, 50, sometimes I'll do like a 10 acre piece or 20 acre, but usually when I get there, like the number one thing is I want bedding.
Yep.
And I understand, but sometimes the way I see it is if we put this bedding on your property, we still have to be able to get maneuver around without spooking this thing out.
Exactly.
And if the bedding doesn't make sense where you can't hunt it without spooking it out, your next best thing is to focus on just food. Just have good food. I don't know how you feel about that or.
No, I'm the same way because the prime example is here on my 16 acres. It's it's open old pasture, farm pasture, cattle pastures around here. And I really don't want the deer living here. Number one, our house sits at the south end of the property. We have to drive through the entire property to get in and out of here. Thank God we're on a dead end road back here and we're half a mile off the main road. But I just don't want the deer here because number one, they're not going to stay here. Right. But if we can create something where when they do pass through here in daylight hours,
slow them down,
wasting their time, slowing them down, but giving them that sense of security with screening, strategically screening our plots off. And it has worked in the past. Last couple of years, just doing other client work, you know, neglecting my own stuff here on this particular property of my own. We've kind of neglected to do some of that screening. It just time got away from us. Mm-hmm. And, but I know one year, I think it was 2019, we had a lot of fun here. We had a Boone and Crockett living here, and my oldest son at the time was 15, 16 years old. And on the 5th of November, he had this deer at 20 yards. He was just waiting. He was at full draw. He was just waiting for him to crest the hill to get a good clear shot at his vitals. My wife, she come cruising up the driveway, going to school to get the other kid from basketball practice. It's just the way it was, you know. But what I was getting at is that food plot at that time, it was screened and it gave him a sense of security to be in there. And he was coming in there to check does, sure. But he was coming in there naturally too.
Right.
Because of that sense of security. Mm-hmm. And these last couple of years when I haven't had that, we've had him here. I've had him on trail camera, but just not as often as you do when you have it screened properly.
See, I have much the same situation you just described.
Yep.
And Dave's been here and saw it. It's the same thing. And I'm glad you said it before I did. Now I don't sound crazy too. I don't want deer staying here.
Right.
I got to get in and out.
Yep.
And where I live is like a tourist trap. It's a bunch of camps and things where people come from Pittsburgh and camp here, or from Ohio, they come across, down from New York. Everybody has a camp. So there's a lot of small parcels and there's like maybe the biggest parcels around are like maybe 50 at a pop, you know, and that seems to be where the deer are staying. And those are right adjacent to my destination plots. So it works out real nice. I can get in and out, and they don't necessarily, when they come to the destination plot, I get stuck in a tree stand sometimes, but they also have an agenda to go somewhere else. So I have to wait it out. Maybe I might get stuck in a tree for an hour. You know, I might be past my bedtime some nights, but they eventually walk off and I can climb down and get out of there. You know?
Yep. Yep.
And so it works out.
Yep.
Now, Ryan, when you're saying screening, are you using like maybe incognito, or are you like edge feathering a certain area, or how are you doing that?
It depends on the situation, but here at home, it's mostly incognito.
Okay.
I want to try a little switchgrass this year just because I think I have a couple places where switchgrass, something more permanent, perennial will fit the bill a little bit better, but a lot of incognito here.
Okay.
That's been really good. I've tried some other screenings in the past before incognito came out, and incognito just seems to be the ticket. And I'm not trying to, just because I'm affiliated with Domain Outdoors doesn't mean I'm trying to say it's the only answer, But in my experience with it in the last few years now, it just seems to be
it's a good option.
It's a great option. Exactly. Yeah,
for sure.
Okay.
I used to order screening from a different company in a different state before. And I mean, it worked out, but it's real easy now with Incognito right there.
Yes.
You know,
absolutely.
And it's a good blend.
Definitely yes, it is.
Yeah. I plant it pretty much every single year for like the past 4 or 5 years now.
I have to screen off roads and neighbors. Yep. I've got a neighbor problem.
Sure. Yeah. Sure.
I think Ryan does too, a little bit, maybe.
I've got a little bit of a neighbor problem. Not so much here. And one would think with the Amish community we have around here that I'd have a lot of pressure from them. On the contrary, I really don't. This clan around here doesn't hunt a whole lot. And I know our neighbors that have rented our cattle pasture from us in the past, they don't hunt at all. That family doesn't, which is weird. They cut up deer. They've cut up a lot of my own deer, and I've given them deer, but they don't hunt.
Wow.
I do have a neighbor. He's actually my dad's first cousin. They're fence sitters. But we're not supposed to sit anywhere near the fence. They throw a fit. They've actually, you know, and I'm not trying to go off on this kind of a tangent, but at the same time, I want to address it. They're the type of people where they can sit on the line fence, but we're not even supposed to look across it. So I've done some things that they don't like, but hey, it's our property, you know, and we're going to manipulate the deer to move around where we want them to be. And we're not, by no means am I trying to keep you from seeing deer. And I understand deer will go wherever they want to go. They're a wild animal. And they have their options to go in and out, you know, and pass through the properties. But when they're on my side of the fence, I want to keep them there as long as I possibly can.
Yeah.
Keep them away from you.
Oh yeah.
If that's the game you want to play, you know,
right. Exactly. Now, obviously if you go to some client's property, are you using hinge cutting as a screen to block certain areas off?
In some cases I am. Yep. I had a partner in this business. He was mostly my food plot guy. And unfortunately he passed away in 2022. Ooh. From, he had a seizure and he drowned while fishing, but he helped me out quite a bit. And we actually took fallen debris, tree debris, you know, just on the ground. And we stacked that up. We did some hinge cutting on top of that, but we kind of made kind of like a Lincoln log effect in that woods. And it was a great screening for the guy. But yeah, I've used hinge cutting quite a bit for screening, even on my, so I have 3 properties that my family, myself and my family own. We have 16 acres here at my house. My brother's 240 acre dairy farm. And then my father and I own an 80 acres of woods that sits off of my brother's farm about a mile or so from there. And on that property, the way it sets up, I've had to incorporate hinge cutting there just to get around.
Mm-hmm.
The deer already wanted to be there, and I really didn't have to create any hinge cut bedding areas, but to get around it, I had to implement hinge cutting because there was no alternative. You know, I couldn't go in immediately to plant anything like an annual and then go back in with trees. It would have taken forever to go in with pine trees or whatever. So hinge cutting was the obvious thing to do, and it's helped tremendously.
Okay.
Yep.
Chris, do you have any other questions for Ryan?
I think we covered a lot.
Okay. Yep. So Ryan, tell everybody, now you go everywhere, right? You'll go to anywhere in the US.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. How can somebody hire you? Where can they find you?
So fortunately, most of my business in the last couple of years has been word of mouth, but you know, I'm on Facebook, whether it's my personal page or my business page, Epic Whitetail Habitat LLC. I'm on YouTube as well, Epic Whitetail Habitat. And then I have a website, epicwhitetailhabitat.com, www.epicwhitetailhabitat.com. I'm on Instagram, very limited availability on Snapchat, couple other social media platforms, but very limited. I do a little bit of content creation on Pinterest. You can find some of my for blogs, I guess. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Have you ever consulted in Maryland?
I have not consulted in Maryland yet.
Okay.
And if I ever do, I'm calling you.
Sounds good.
Yep.
I did remember one thing, and it's not a question. I think the first time I ever saw Mr. Ryan was, I think it was a short, and it was about the Earthway spreader.
Sure.
Filling it up so it won't spill.
Yep.
Cut a bucket in half and shoved it down in there. I still use that to this day.
Sure, sure.
It works.
Somebody showed it to me, and I had to create a video about it. And
yep.
Yeah.
It's a pain in the butt when they collapse, and even the, like even the plastic guards they give you in there to stand it up, it still falls.
Yep, it sure does.
Yeah.
It
but
sure
it's a great does. Spreader besides that.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so I do some work with another habitat consultant out of Lexington, Kentucky. He's somebody that's just gotten into the business. He's a chiropractor down there. He just primarily does the consulting end. So I do a lot of the chainsaw work for the guy if he implements any on properties that he consults on. And then he has somebody locally that he hires out for food plotting and stuff too. And that's Dr. Sean Twitt out of Lexington, Kentucky. His company name is Mature Whitetail Strategies. And he's a good book of knowledge. I can't remember how many Pope and Young bucks he has under his belt, but if you go to his website, it's a picture of him in front of his wall of bucks, kind of like a Don Higgins type of guy. And he's a real book of knowledge. He's originally from the state of Wisconsin. We've been friends for a long time. This past year, he was after a tremendous deer on the Kentucky River. It was just the farm itself that I've been on with him. He was over 200 inch deer, and he went in one afternoon in early October. He had just a few minutes to go. He wanted to move this trail camera to kind of pinpoint where this deer was actually coming from. He went in there, and that deer was literally within 15 yards of him for like 10 minutes. The deer had actually laid down. Sean doesn't have his phone with him or any type of camera. He's just got his cell camera. So he turns the camera on, and he actually took a couple pictures of him. They weren't the greatest pictures. If you didn't know what you were looking at, you'd have never known that deer was there. But to have that kind of an encounter with a 200-inch deer at that short of a distance for that long a time, and that deer had no clue you were there, wow. Amazing story.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Unfortunately, we don't know what happened to that deer. Yep. Wow. And he's since lost permission to hunt that farm. The owner is selling the farm, and it's too bad.
Yeah, I've never had an encounter with a 200.
No, I never have either. Yeah. I have with one that was pushing 190, and that was in Missouri one year. He just would not step out from behind that oak tree.
Mm-hmm.
And he turned on he come in looking for the fight, because I rattled him out of a cedar thicket, and come in looking for that fight on an inside corner of a field, you know, so great setup, great location. If I'd have had a decoy, I think it would have been a sealed deal, but unfortunately I didn't. And he turned on a dime and wheeled out of there.
Very cool.
Cool.
Well, we appreciate you coming on, and maybe before hunting season or something, maybe we'll have you back and discuss some maybe hunting strategies.
You bet. That sounds real good.
All right.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
That sounds good.
You bet.
Appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you.